So Isaiah 40, verse 12. Who has measured the waters in the hollow of his hand, or with the breadth of his hand marked off the heavens? Who has held the dust of the earth in a basket, or weighed the mountains on the scales, or the hills in a balance? Who can fathom the spirit of the Lord, or instruct the Lord as his counselor? Whom did the Lord consult to enlighten him, and who taught him the right way? Who was it that taught him knowledge, or showed him the path of understanding? Surely the nations are like a drop in a bucket. They are regarded as dust on the scales. He weighs the islands as though they were fine dust. Lebanon is not sufficient for altar fires, nor its animals enough for burnt offerings. Before him, all the nations are as nothing. They are regarded by him as worthless and less than nothing. With whom, then, will you compare God? To what image will you liken him? As for an idol, a metal worker casts it, and a goldsmith overlays it with gold, and fashions silver chains for it. A person too poor to present such an offering selects wood that will not rot, and they look for a skilled worker to set up an idol that will not topple. Do you not know? Have you not heard? Has it not been told from the beginning? Have you not understood since the earth was founded? He sits enthroned above the circle of the earth, and its people are like grasshoppers. He stretches out the heavens like a canopy and spreads them out like a tent to live in. He brings princes to naught. He reduces the rulers of this world to nothing. No sooner are they planted, no sooner are they sown, no sooner do they take root in the ground, than he blows on them, and they wither, and a whirlwind sweeps them away like chaff. To whom will you compare me? Or who is my equal, says the Holy One?
Andy, would you come and join me just for a moment? So I'm going to ask Andy a couple of questions to introduce him. So my first question is, when did you first gain your love of science?
So at school, I was always good at science. Physics was my favourite lesson, so secondary school.
Don't leave.
So I was a kid in the class who didn't answer all the questions because sort of it's like a silent pact with the teacher. He knew I knew the answers, and I knew
that he knew.
And sometimes he'd ask a question in the class, and if nobody could answer it, he'd say, "Andy, tell them," and I'd come up with the answer. So I like physics because you sort of understood. Well, I understood how things worked.
Yeah, and that are you getting hot over there, Pete?
Right. Is he on video?
Not at all distracted. and that love of science continued, and you went to university. Sadly, you went to the other one. I remember somebody saying that once, the other one. It's like, well, I went to University of Surrey. There is more than two universities. Andy went to Oxford. Where you studied physics, or did you study natural sciences?
No, I studied physics. In fact, I didn't consider Cambridge because it did natural sciences, but I loved physics, and I didn't want to waste my effort on biology and chemistry and all that sort of stuff. So.
But there you go. Cambridge will come into the 21st century eventually. I once said, when I was training in Oxford, I once said to them, "When will we come into the 21st century?" And they said, "We're still making our way out of the 16th century. Give us time." So these things take time. What about your love of the Lord? Where did you get that love for the Lord Jesus?
I mean, I was brought up in a church. So my parents went to an Anglican church. So I always believed. But it wasn't until a friend of mine who's a couple of years older, she went to university and came back, and she also went to church, said, I've become a Christian. I thought, well, what do you mean you've become a Christian? You've been
to
church
already?
Me all your life. And so she explained a bit about how you need to make it personal and take your own step of faith. Mm. And so that was that for me. After I'd spoke with her, I prayed that it would be real for me, mm. and that I'd accept Jesus as my Lord and Saviour. But there are other points in my life which were really important steps. So, before that, a couple of years before that, I was confirmed, and that for me was a real important step in the journey of faith.
Thank you. And have you ever struggled with that relationship between science and faith, or was it always something that seemed obviously an easy fit?
Even now, sometimes I do. It almost seems like, I love science popularizers. I like watching humor, science humor, Infinite Monkey Cage. Listen to that if you've ever heard of that. But you've got people who are quite prominent atheists who seem to be at the top of science popularization. And you think, oh, do you have to be almost an atheist to get to the top of science? So where are the real Christian scientists who are at the very top and are popularizing it and are on telly and on the radio? So it does make you step back every now and then and say, question, well, have we got something wrong here?
Okay, thank you. So our reading for Andy was Isaiah 40, but I've split it up into two parts because it's quite long otherwise. But I'm going to start again at verse 24 to pick it up again. So it's sort of like previously in Isaiah 40, as they do on television programs. I'm going to start at verse 24. Isaiah 40, verse 24. No sooner are they planted, no sooner are they sown, no sooner do they take root in the ground, than he blows on them and they wither, and the whirlwind sweeps them away like chaff. To whom will you compare me? Or who is my equal? Says the Holy One. Lift up your eyes. Look to the heavens. Who created all these? Who brings out the starry host one by one? Who calls forth each of them by name? Because of his great power and mighty strength, not one of them is missing. Why do you complain, Jacob? Why do you say, Israel, my way is hidden from the Lord? My cause is disregarded by my God. Do you not know? Have you not heard? The Lord is the everlasting God, the creator of the ends of the earth. He will not grow tired or weary, and his understanding no one can fathom. He gives strength to the weary and increases the power of the weak. Even youths grow tired and weary, and young men stumble and fall. But those who hope in the Lord will renew their strength. They will soar on wings like eagles, and they will run and not grow weary. They will walk and not be faint. I'm going to pray for Andy. Lord, we thank you for Andy. Thank you for his love for you and his love for science. We pray for him as he opens up your word today. That he would also open his heart to you and your spirit and be guided by you. May we too have open ears and open hearts to hear you through him. Amen. Thanks, Andy.
Well, thank you so much for inviting me today. I really love the concept of Science Sunday. I'm going to take it back and suggest we have something similar at our church. Because there is a lot of sort of faff in the media, isn't there, about science versus faith. And it always frustrates me a bit. I see science and faith a bit like, latitude and longitude, two different dimensions. Science can perhaps tell you what your latitude is. If I said, the latitude was 52 degrees north, you'd have a good understanding that it's going to be probably cold in the in January and February. It's probably going to be a bit rainy. It tells you quite a bit about the place, but it doesn't tell you, does it, whether you're in I'm not going to Burwell. I don't know what the latitude is, but it'd be about that, or whether you're in the middle of Alberta or middle of the Pacific Ocean. So you need the longitude to tell you that, and perhaps that's what faith is like. And I think if you just operate on one of those, you're going to be a bit at sea and not knowing a good understanding of what's going on in the world and what makes things happen. There's plenty of scientists who are atheists, really good understanding of latitude. And you come across Christians who push science away, or that's against faith, isn't it? Yeah, what about Darwin or something? We'll be straight in there. And they've got a good understanding of, the Lord and longitude. But, to get that real understanding of where you are, I think you need both. So that's where I come from. So I think it's a really great concept. I've got a box of tricks here. We've already started to explore my love of science at school. Anybody know what might be in there? It's a bit interactive, by the way, this. In case you're sitting comfortably, don't get too comfortable. Any guesses what might be in there?
Slide rule.
Slide rule, there we are. Well, I'm speaking to an age of population who had to use these at school. I was the last year that had to use these for O-levels, if you remember O-levels. If you want to multiply 2 by 3 and you can't remember, then you had to line the 1 up with 2, didn't you? And then move along with 3 and then read off with your... I broke this, actually, so it's slightly off. So it might come out at 5.9. Yeah, something like that. So, slide rule. So that's the slide rule used at school. I used to love maths. Maths because... it was predictable. I like predictable things. I wasn't very good, I was geeky, so I was really good at maths and science. I wasn't really good at the social sort of aspects because that was unpredictable. If you push something, it moves and you can calculate how far it moves. If you push someone, you're not quite sure what's going to happen. So, yeah, that was a bit of a struggle for me. And then, as I explained, I became a Christian. I was about 15. It wasn't really until I went to university that I really got a boost to my faith. So I went to a sort of village church. It was quite villagey. Had some lovely Christians there, but it wasn't really... as a young person, really stretching my faith. So it wasn't really until I went to university that I met Christians from different backgrounds as well. There were Baptists there and there were Catholics and there were Anglicans. We're all mixed together and you're learning off each other and you're really stretching your faith as you think about the different flavours of Christianity they are. But worshipping together, you could worship together with these people who come from different backgrounds. That was amazing. So that was a real boost to my faith. It was interesting. I had a lot of most of my friends were mathematicians rather than physicists, and they were amazed at how many mathematicians were Christians. So I remember once one of my friends sitting in a lecture, and there was about 100 students there. And he knew most of them. So he was going around, not Christian, and was sort of calculating it. And he worked out that about 33%, a third of the people in that lecture hall were Christians. And he thought, oh, wow, that's a lot higher than the average proportion in the population. What is it about logic that drives you towards faith? Or what is it about faith that makes you appreciate logic? So there was something there. The other high proportion, actually, and certainly in the Christian Union I was involved, it was full of lawyers. People who really like to dig into things understand what's happened and why it's happened. I mean, there's a famous book, isn't there? Who Moves the Stone, is that it? Written by a lawyer who set out to disprove the resurrection. Came round to the other point of view. So that was a real eye-opener. And certainly for me, showed that science and faith are not opposites at all, but actually the study of one can actually drive you towards the other. So that was really interesting. So after I left university, I went to work for an organisation called the CEGB. Anybody remember what that was? Brilliant. Central Electricity Generating Board. I'm really grateful for them because they set me up with defined benefits. So I've got a final salary pension scheme thanks to the CEGB. You don't get those now. So they did all the generation, transmission of electricity. They were privatised in the whole wave of privatisation that we had in the 80s, at the end of the 80s. So 1990... I moved up to, you might have seen in the news, Ratcliffe Power Station was the last coal power station to be running. On the site of Ratcliffe Power Station is a technology and research centre, and I moved up to that and did all sorts of research, particularly around renewable energy, and then a complete switch into how markets work and how we could be the best trading company in the marketplace. So understanding how you generate electricity and the commerce that goes around that was really interesting. The end of the 80s, something else important happened. We got married, so we've been married 35 or is it 36 years now? I'll do the calculations later. Yeah, and then the company I work for, PowerGen, got taken over by E.ON, which is a name you might recognise because it still sells electricity now. One of the best things, apart from my salary that I got from E.ON, was this great little mat that you can sit on when you go for a walk and you just need to sit on a rock. And actually I've got two friends who I still go walking with from E.ON, and we've all got our little... Because it's a German company, we call them Sitzen Mat. I don't know whether that's the right terminology, but we love our little mats. I worked for E.ON for a while. Had children during that time. They're now grown up, so my children are 28 and 29 and 31. My son lives in the village where we live with his wife, and my daughter down in Bristol with her husband. I did leave E.ON in about 2013. I went to work for an organisation called Energy Research Partnership. That was really quite an exciting organisation to work for because that was set up by the CEO of E.ON UK and the chief scientific advisor to DEC. DEC is an acronym that stands for Department of Energy and Climate Change, and that was the Department of Energy in the 2010s. And each department in government, or most departments, have a chief scientific advisor who does what it says on the tin. But they set up this group to get industry talking to government, mix some academics in. So there was a professor from here, actually, from Cambridge, Professor Allwood, who was part of that. Basically get the captains of industry around the table. So we had someone from the board of BP and someone from the board of Shell and E.ON and various companies like Bosch, Worcester Bosch, who make heating systems at home. Get them around the table with a few... It wasn't just the CSA of the Department of Energy. We had the Department of Transport, scientific advisor there as well, in industry. And then we mixed in some academics and then, surprisingly, some pressure groups. We had someone from Friends of the Earth sat around the same table as Shell and BP and E.ON. And we had a really intelligent discussions about how are we going to tackle the decarbonisation of the energy system? How are we going to get to a point where we're not... not harming the environment more than the environment can stand. And so I ran that organisation for a few years, so that was quite exciting. And then I left and set up my own company. Let's see if this clicker works. I've got just a picture of the sort of thing I... Oh, OK, has it gone off? Is it this button at the top? No. There we are. Now, I don't expect you to understand this chart. I won't be testing you later. But this is the sort of thing I produce. But if you're interested, on this axis here is the cost of running the electricity system. So your bill, your electricity bill, basically. And along here is how decarbonised it is. So we're actually over here at the moment. We've gone more than halfway towards cleaning up the electricity system. Our government have promised we're going to get to net zero, so that's this line completely decarbonised. Each of the spots is a different mix of generating plant on the system. So up here there might be lots and lots of nuclear and lots of renewables, more than you need, and that's why it's expensive. But it's reasonably decarbonised. I've written a programme that can go through a year with different weather patterns and say what would happen if we had this much wind and nuclear on the system we ran it through an ordinary year and tried to keep the lights on. If you're interested in this, the charts always go up like this. This is not what they'll tell you, that basically if you're going to clean up the electricity system, it will cost money. Things will not get cheaper. You know, you'll have people stand up and say, wind is the cheapest thing since sliced bread, you know. Electricity bills will come down. They won't. Okay, there's no such thing as free lunch. If it's the cheapest thing to do, we'd have been doing it years ago. So it's going to cost money. And the other thing I do, which is quite exciting, I really enjoy this. Has it? Okay. So I run workshop events. I'm in a joint venture with a colleague from Nottingham, and we run a company called Heuristic Games. And we go into universities, one of our most popular clients, and they'll have a cohort of students who will play at being the owner of a utility. And we'll give them a system to trade electricity with each other, and they'll have a screen like this. And over here, they've got a list of power stations that they operate because they're playing this game. Over here, a list of customers that they need to satisfy. And in the middle, they've got a facility to trade, which means they can generate electricity, and if they generate too much, they can sell it. And this is like eBay for power, and somebody will see that, and they'll click on it and buy it. This, interestingly, was written by my son, Dominic. During COVID, he was a lighting technician for theatres and big gig events, which obviously all came to a halt in COVID. So I put it to good use to write this system for me. And actually, this has been really popular, so that's been really good for the business. And we do other events as well. I've got this is a tram. We run a game called Transport Planner, where we give people basically a load of roads that they put together to connect their housing estates with where people want to get to, city centre, and then they choose whether they're going to put trams on the road or cars, or whether they're going to put buses or cycle lanes, and then we basically give them feedback as to how much, you know, what the air quality is like in that city and whether people are moving into it or whether it's a bad city and people are moving out of it, and they have to then deal with congestion, and then we tell them that they have to decarbonise the system as well. So I really enjoy that. That's a good, fun thing to do. So that's my life. just to say a little bit about Ali, who runs the academic side of the Light College, really specialises in working with people who love Jesus, want to tell others about that, but don't really know how to go about doing it, but want a sort of academic stroke practical course. Really does well with mature students, so if that feels like it floats your boat, go and talk to Ali. It's a little advert there for what she does. My involvement in church is around youth, and I run the youth at our church, and go on Script Union holiday, where children and young people come to that as well. So that's what floats my boat. So I'm going to now get a little bit interactive, because I'm going to ask you, where do you think your energy comes from? So, and I'm thinking of electricity here. So where do you think the UK, how does it make its electricity? Any guesses?
Gas.
Okay, I'm glad you mentioned that. I've got, get the right jar. I've got a jar of gas here, and you're going, how do I know that's a jar of gas? How do you find out? So if I take the top off, oh, it is. I did ask Chris if I could set fire to things. He said, that's fine. So, gas. Yeah, how else do we generate electricity?
Nuclear.
Right. Let me just find my nuclear fuel rod. I was struggling to find a nuclear. I've got a lot of things in my garage, but I haven't got any nuclear fuel rods. But I have got some. I have got something that's radioactive. You probably have as well, actually. Anybody got one of these? Oh, it does work. Okay. Smoke alarms. They have a little bit of a radioactive element called americium 241, if you're really interested. I don't know whether you can get that on eBay. You probably can, actually. And it's used to ionise the air, and that helps the detector detect whether there's smoke particles there. So a lot of them use nuclear technology in your smoke alarm. So we've got nuclear gas. Anything else?
It's a bit of a touchy subject around here, but
solar, touchy subject. Okay, right, okay. So would it upset you to know that I've bought some solar panels to Burwell? We've got our own. These are probably not that obtrusive, are they? And they wouldn't generate that much. It's some little solar, but little PV panels. I haven't tested them out yet. I doubt whether they would generate much at all, but I thought they'd be fun to have. So we've got solar panels. Yeah. Anything else? Wind. Yes, there's the obvious one. Let's see if this works. Does it go round? Not really. Oh, nearly. You can see it work. So, yes. Wind. I've still got a few things in my box there.
Hydroelectricity.
Yes, I bought some hydro. There we are. So you take water at a great height, run it through a turbine, that's lower down, generate electricity. That wouldn't generate much. In fact, people have asked me, why don't we put turbines on the bottom of our drain pipes? You know, so when it rains, you can generate all this electricity. And I sort of worked it out that you get, I think it was 28 watt hours over the year on my house. Not kilowatt hours, watt hours. So that's 0.028. Probably wouldn't pay for itself.
Coal.
Coal. Oh, yes. Glad you mentioned that. We have just stopped burning coal, but I've got a piece of coal here. It's quite hard to burn, actually. If I put that there, it's not going to set on fire. So, you know, coal power station, you grind it into small granules, you blow it in as if it's a gas, and then you have this massive flame in the boiler. So, yes, Ratcliffe was the last power station to burn coal in the UK, so we stopped doing this. I picked this up off a beach in Northumberland, because the coal seams go out to sea, and the coal gets broken up and washed onto the beach. So it's quite nice because it's smoothed down by the sea, so you don't get dusty black hands from it. Got that. Oh, got one. Well, I've got one thing left that's important.
Wood chip.
Wood chip. Yes, you've seen the log. So that's from a tree that we cut down. Very controversial, that, at the moment. We've got a power station, used to burn coal. The biggest power station in the UK, Drax, used to burn coal. It's converted four of its units, had six, to burn wood chip. The wood chip comes from America, Canada, Estonia, I think. Big controversy. They would say, and our government says, well, that's renewable energy, because for every, you know, every bit of kilogram of wood you burn, a kilogram will grow, so it's just going around in a cycle, no more CO2 in the atmosphere. But actually, some pressure groups have had a look at what they're doing, and it looks like they're clearing forest, and it's not regrowing anything like as fast as they're burning it. So very controversial as to whether that's really renewable or not. Oh, I have got one other there that we... I'm so glad you haven't mentioned it, because we don't use it in the UK, but it is important in some countries, like Iceland.
Geothermal.
Geothermal, yeah. Just got a bit of volcanic rock there. Ali and I went on holiday to Iceland in 1990, and there was went to swim in the Blue Lagoon. Fantastic place. It's the outfall of a geothermal power station. So you've got this power station steaming away in the corner. The lake is bright blue. They say it's really healthy for you because it's full of selenium. I don't know whether that really is healthy for you, but anyway, you swim in it. But I don't know whether you saw on the news recently, there's a lava flow creeping across towards the Blue Lagoon. It's got to the car park, to the Blue Lagoon now, and they're desperately building big buns of lava and, you know, trying to cool it to stop it actually filling in the Blue Lagoon. So pluses and minuses with geothermal. I'm sort of glad we haven't got it, actually. Yeah, so that's where our electricity comes from. If you think about other energy, electricity is probably only about a third of the energy we use. The other energy, of course, is to heat our home, which is nearly all gas. And the other one is oil. So I did get a jar. I'm not going to set fire to it, but it's actually diesel. So I didn't think I'd bring petrol because that really is quite explosive. But that's diesel. Yes, we burn an awful lot of that. So the challenge in my line of work is, you know, how do we move from one to the other, and getting people just to think around the issues around that, about where our energy comes from, where it will come from, given that we've signed international agreements and you stood up on the world stage and said we are going to get to net zero. The thing I like about the UK introduced the Climate Change Act in 2008, and that was a cross-party agreement. I think it had something like, in Parliament, 520 votes for, 8 against. So, you know, real Labour and the Conservatives and the Liberal Democrats working together to say, this is too big for politics, we're going to, you know, introduce an act that will hold the government's feet to the fire as we get closer to 2050 and say, how are you doing? Put it into law that we must reduce our emissions to zero. So the first country to do that. So making electricity. I thought it'd be fun just to have a look at how we made electricity over the last month. So this was October. You've mentioned all of these. You can see wind was just about the biggest, followed by gas. Followed by nuclear. Nuclear is on the way out because all our reactors are old and they are going to close down over the next few years. Imports. Some people are worried about that. I'm a little bit worried about that, that we're relying more and more on imported electricity. And then the other ones,
Biomass, well, that's really only Drax. There's a couple of other little stations. Coal has gone. Hydro, you can see how small hydro are, and solar, almost irrelevant. So you've got these big solar farms that actually don't contribute much. I mean, this is October, but it's, you know, is it the best place to build solar farms? So I question that in the UK. But, you know, if you, on the other hand, it's something you can put on the roof. It's something you can have at home. I've got a solar panel at home. Here's the last month. What you've got here is each of these peaks is a day. So this is night, this is getting up, this is the tea time peak. So in the UK, 4 to 6 o'clock is a real peak of electricity because people come from home from school. Cup of tea. The cup of tea is responsible for a lot of problems as well as solutions, actually. The interesting thing about this, you can see along the bottom, nuclear just generates. There's obviously some reactors shutting down there for refueling. The one to watch is this blue. This is wind. So over here, this was a storm that came through. Can't remember the name of it. Began with B, I think. And you can see most of our energy came from wind during that storm. Earlier in the month, here, the wind has pretty much disappeared. So about 2 or 3% from wind. So that's the interesting thing in my job is how do we build a system that can manage with no wind and can manage with loads and loads of wind. So that's a real challenge. And I thought you might be interested in what happened recently. So that's yesterday. It was quite windy yesterday, so it's fairly constant. So a good 50% from wind. And then this orange, this is the gas, low load overnight, and then it comes up in the morning and reaches a peak to make your cups of tea, and then drops down gradually as people go to bed. And then all this coloured bit at the top, there's a bit of solar, hardly any, and then a bit of blue over the daytime peak, save the hydro for the day, and the rest of it's imports, different importing cables, the different colours. So anyway, let's make a switch, if we can do that, and say, where does your energy come from? Where does your energy come from? And I want to now think about the other dimension. This is the, if you like, the, which way round did I have it? The latitude dimension. Let's think about the longitude now. Where's your energy coming from to get you through each day? And I kept coming back to Isaiah 40. I looked at other passages, but I just kept circling back to here. Just a bit of context. Isaiah 40 follows chapter 39. There we are. I'm sure you knew that. But 1 to 39 was written to the people of Israel before they went into exile. So they lived in their own land. They'd overcome Syrian attacks. But the prophet was saying, that there are problems coming. 40 onwards was written to the Israelites after they'd been captured and taken into captivity. The Israelites here are not in their own land, the Jews, they are in Babylonia. They were looking forward to their freedom. The interesting thing about this bit of Isaiah, though, is every now and then the focus switches to the coming Messiah. So it talks about the salvation, and sometimes it's talking about how the Jews are going to be saved out of Babylon, but sometimes the focus switches to the Messiah, the coming Messiah, and you have to watch that as you read through it. Let's look at chapter 40, 12 to 15. And I've just put in some comments here as to what struck me as I looked at that. Those first that verse 12, it talks about Creator God being beyond all we can imagine, all we can perceive. This is one of my other favourite topics. I'm sure I've spoken here, and I think I did when I did the Zoom one a few years ago, was about space and astronomy, you know. Isaiah here saying, you know, who's measured the water in the hollow of his hand, you know, all the seas in his hand. This is Creator God who's crafted things with his hands, not physically but metaphorically, has put things together, weighed the mountains on scales. The Creator God, this is just, we can't imagine how you put a mountain together or create the Pacific Ocean. But then there's a switch to who can fathom the Spirit of the Lord, and this is a counselor God. This is the God who has the wisdom to be our counselor, and it's beyond human advice and understanding. He is the one that gives us that real, you know, advice, that counselling, that who can we go to talk to about our big issues. And then we switch again to talk about the all-knowing God. It's beyond our knowing and knowledge and understanding. Who was it that taught him knowledge or showed him the path of understanding? You know, God is the source of knowledge and understanding. How great it is we can be tapped into that, however much we love physics, to actually go to the maker of physics. Yeah, when you wrote Schrodinger's equation, what were you on about? You know, you can talk to God about that. And then we think back about what's going on here on Earth. Surely the nations of the Earth, they're like a drop in a bucket. To him, they're just dust on the scales. So this is great big. It made me think about that children's song. My God is a great big God, you know, higher than the skyscraper, wider than the universe. Quite different dimensions there, aren't they? Skyscraper is quite small compared to the universe. But yeah, that's our big God. This bit is interesting because I like this bit because there's some hints of energy, going back to the science energy that they used in the time this was written, a few hundred years BC. So they talk about an altar fire. There we are. They're burning stuff to release light and heat. The wood came from Lebanon. Lebanon was famous for its big cedar trees and other forests. So they're saying there isn't enough wood in all of Lebanon to actually, you know, give God the praise we want to give him through altar fires. And they burn animal fat as well, so there's some more energy. And just switching to that bottom bit as well, it talks about the smith. Goldsmith, silversmith, and there'd be a blacksmith in there as well. They would use charcoal to heat their fire and to carry out their crafts and manpower as well, of course, with their hammer and things. So just the snippets of energy going on there, and the sort of thing I look out for because I'm interested in that as well as the spiritual significance of what's going on in the passage. We've got that bit in the middle as well. Again, talking about an all-powerful God beyond earthly powers. Yeah, absolutely amazing. I like this, and when Chris read it, do you not know? Have you not heard? Keeps going on. Don't you not know? Have you not heard? Have you been told this from the beginning? This is back to, you know, Creator God. Again, all we can imagine and ask. He's enthroned above the circle of the earth. Well, when I read that, I think, did they know the earth was round? Did Isaiah know the earth was round at that point? I don't know. Or was it just using the circle in a different context, more poetic? Interesting thought there. Leave that with you because I don't know the answer. And then that second half being the all-powerful God, the God of power beyond our earthly powers.
you know, the princes, the rulers of this world, they're nothing to God in terms of, you know, the power and the importance that they have. So we might worry about rulers and princes and president-elects, for example. But, you know, God could just uproot them, move them on in a snap of his fingers if he wanted to. This is the key bit at the end, I think, these last few verses. This is my one of my favourite numbers, 100 billion, because it keeps popping up. 100 billion, roughly 100 billion stars in our galaxy. That's a big number, 100 billion. Just try and imagine it. I worked it out that if you had a tipper truck of very fine sand, sort of tipped a pile of sand in your drive, it's probably about 100 billion grains. That's how many stars there are in our galaxy, but in the whole universe, there's 100 billion galaxies. It just like blows your mind how many stars are. That's we can see, not beyond our sight. We can only see so far. And yet he names them all. He knows them all. I named a couple there because I look up at the sky and somebody the other day said, "What's that bright star that, you know, rises early in the evening?" And it's probably Jupiter they were looking at the moment. So if you look over to the east, and the brightest white star that you can see is actually a planet, it's Jupiter. If you wait up a bit longer, I don't know whether it's about 8, 9, 10 o'clock, there'll be an orangey, quite bright one coming up after it. That's Mars. So they're in the east, and then there's a couple of planets following the sun down in the west at the moment in the evening. So you look over that way, you'll see Saturn high up and Venus a bit closer to the sun. They're the really bright ones. put that there just because I'm interested in that. It's a bonus point for you. Interesting little bit at the bottom there. It's almost like, well, what's this doing here? We've got this fantastic, you know, almost poetry about how God's the creator, how wonderful, how great he is. And then there's a little bit of, come on, why? What's this grumbling going on here? Remember, this is, why do you complain, O Jacob? This is talking about the Israelites in Babylon. They're grumbling, they're complaining because they've been taken to a foreign land, despite their being warned that if they broke the covenant, that's where they would end up. But they are under pressure, they're being oppressed. And they're saying, are you there, God? Can you hear me? Have you forgotten me? I thought it was useful, though, because sometimes we feel like we might be connected in with the most powerful, wonderful God, but sometimes we just feel, are you there? Can you hear me? Do you know, can you feel what I'm going through at the moment? How it feels for me? It just brings that little bit of human reality to it, doesn't it? That we're not the first person to question whether God's there in the midst of our difficult period. But here's another. Do you not know? Have you not heard? You know, this is the creator God again, the beginning and the end. It says there, creator of the ends of the earth. He is the God of the Big Bang. He is the God of the heat death of the universe, you know, from the beginning to the end. And yet, we might get tired, and it says even young people get worn out here. God doesn't. He's not going to run out of energy, grow weary. He will not grow tired and weary. His understanding nobody can fathom. And he is the one, and this is the crux of the message really, here's the one who gives power and strength to the weary. So if you're feeling weary, which is a state of low energy, isn't it? I've run out of energy.
And it was one of when Dom was younger and he was a child at home with us. He used to say, I'm feeling weary. What he meant was I've run out of energy. I'm just not feeling good. I'm feeling ill. That's what happens, isn't it? You know, if I don't feed you for 3 days, you're probably feeling weary because you've run out of energy. And even young people grow tired and weary. But if you hope in the Lord, that's where you renew your strength. That's where your renewable energy will come from the Lord. He will renew it. So many of these, you know, where your physical energy and electricity comes from, I can see parallels in, you know, what's the ultimate source of our energy? If it's connected in with the Lord, he's the one who will renew it and be that renewable energy. So we can soar like eagles. So I just want to leave you with these thoughts and ask that question again. Where does your energy come from? Is it from God? And we've seen him as the creator, the counselor, omniscient, all-knowing, all-powerful God. Or does some of your energy come from things of this earth around us, things that will grow weary, run out, rust, decay? We didn't mention, actually, I've got a big battery here, nobody mentioned batteries, and they're getting quite important from an energy point of view. This is off my bike, but they run out, don't they? And you have to keep refilling them. We're a bit like batteries, aren't we? We go around, but we need to refill and renew our energy from the Lord as it sort of runs out.